Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
The winner to organize the 2022 FIFA World Cup is Qatar.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Political Football, the World Cup series. After four series looking around the world and back through time to examine how football and politics seem to be inevitably and inextricably knitted together as part of the social fabric of life, Series 5 has been different. We've been devoting each episode in this series to a particular World Cup tournament, ranging from 1930 up to and including the scheduled 2022 event in Qatar. In the company of a number of typically brilliant and knowledgeable guests, we have looked in depth at each tournament, considering the wider political situation at the time, how and why politics were involved in the awarding of the tournament, and any issues regarding location, plus, of course, the movers and shakers at the heart of these things. We've also looked at any political aspects involving players, teams, managers, and key rivalries. It's a new slant of political football theme, and one that we hope you've enjoyed. We've certainly found it fascinating. We've now reached the conclusion of our journey, and today we'll be looking at the upcoming World Cup tournament scheduled for Qatar in 2022. As well as the final episode of the World Cup series, it will also bring down the curtain on the political football podcasts. As ever, as he has been throughout the numerous episodes, sitting in the co-host seat alongside me is my long-term political football comrade-in-arm, Stu Horsfield. How you doing, bro?
Hey, Gary. A little bit emotional, not going to lie. But yeah, I'm good. I'm, as always, looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too, mate. Yeah, as you say, it's been a little bit emotional, but, you know, it's been a fabulous journey. And, you know, and today is going to be another school day for us, mate, as so many of the episodes have been in the past.
I feel now I could probably sit my A-levels in history and politics.
So who's our guest today, buddy?
So for the very last time, we've got Karan Tejwani. He's featured on These Football Times. Been with TFT since October 2016. Also the co-founder and lead editor of the wonderful website and the Football Chronicle.
Yeah. Hi, Steve. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Karan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, Karan. So welcome on board, mate. And as I mentioned, I hear you've got a couple of books there. Do you want to tell us a little bit about them before we start?
Yeah, sure. The book I've written myself is called Wings of Change. It looks at Red Bull's influence in football. They've been in football itself for the last 15 years. Well, this is the 15th year. And it covers their story so far. You know, they're a bit of a controversial institution in football and what they do. So it looks at that and also looks at the good side of things, which isn't very appreciated by many people, but, you know, there's a bit of good in them. So yeah, that it covers both sides. And my book coming out with Football Chronicle is called Iberia Chronicles. It looks at football in Spain and Portugal. It's basically a small history of stories from both countries. So yeah.
That sounds good, mate. And as somebody who lives in Spain, that sounds particularly interesting to me. Okay, we're going to tap into your knowledge of Qatar 2022. And, you know, as we sort of come to the end of this World Cup series, I don't think we could have picked a more controversial host than this one. So why this tournament? Why do you choose this tournament? What particularly interests you about the politics of 2022?
So with Qatar, it comes as a bit of a twofold. You could say. With me, personally, I lived in the middle. I grew up in the Middle East, and at the time when Qatar were given World Cup, given the hosting rights, it was a bit of fascination to me because. Being from the UAE and seeing a country that was so close to where I lived was a bit of a fascinating prospect. So naturally, and I was pretty young at the time too. I think I was about 10 or 11 years old when they were rights. So it was a bit of a fascinating thing. But as I grew older, I started to understand why it was more of a bad thing. As you don't have to be a massive football fan or a massive football follower to know that Qatar having the World Cup is just wrong. I don't think there's any fan in the world or any journalist who thinks that football, that Qatar getting the World Cup hosting rights were fully ethical and fully clean and legal. So everyone feels that there's some sort of edginess to it, that there was some big bit of brown bags handed around and a bit of corruption around. So there's a lot of politics behind this one. You know, Qatar isn't a massive football nation, or they're trying to be. They won the Asian Cup in 2019, and that was their first real foray into an international standing. But before that, the history was pretty small. Even their local leagues aren't that popular with the people themselves. So, you know, you could say that this is another way of them sports washing. We've seen sports washing being done in recent times with the UAE themselves and their purchase of Manchester City and making them such a massive club in Europe. And, you know, we'll see it more and more often with PSG and even maybe this year with Newcastle United. So the Middle East is trying to almost cleanse their image with sport. And there is no better way of, there is no better sport through that than football, because football is so popular, and it's probably the, it is definitely the most popular game in the world. So it's a bit of sports washing from Qatar. They want to clean their image and let people know that they're more than just the ancient rules that people associate them with. So there's a lot of complications and a lot of stories behind their bidding for the World Cup.
This sounds like another one for us too, doesn't it, mate?
Yeah, it absolutely does. It's, I mean, you know, this could be, it could be partly my ignorance. It could be something that I've seen or read and forgotten about. But to me, I still don't feel like I've had it fully justified to me. I don't mean me personally by FIFA, they don't owe me anything. But I don't feel like I've had it fully justified as to why Qatar was seen as the best place for the 2022 World Cup, regardless of geographical, whatever the reasons are, whatever the criteria is. I still don't have any idea as to why or what it was about the Qatari bid that made it the best and most appropriate bid.
And you're right. I don't think anyone does in football. There is nothing to suggest that Qatar is going to, is a mass, as I said, there's nothing to say that Qatar is a massive football nation. There's, it just seems very sketchy and very dodgy. And there's definitely a lot of corruption going on behind the scenes. When Qatar got the rights for the World Cup, the Middle East was happy. You know, they're saying football's coming to the Middle East, and it's the biggest tournament in football is in the Middle East and all that. And they're right in their sense, but there is nothing to suggest that FIFA looked at all the potential hosts and thought Qatar is the best one based on their footballing history. So it's a very dodgy thing to talk about and to look into.
It's interesting, Karen, to, you know, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here, but I don't disagree with anything that you say, Marty, but I'm just going to sort of probe your reasoning a little bit. So you said that Qatar won the Asian Cup in 2019. I think they've got their league is called the All Stars League. Is that right?
Yep, the Qatar Stars League.
Yeah, because they've got Javi Hernandez managing one of the clubs out there. So, you know, is it case that FIFA are trying to help the game develop in Qatar? Is that part of the reason why they've given Qatar the World Cup? You think?
I doubt that, because the history of Qatari football, before they got the World Cup hosting rights, there was pretty much nothing going on. There were a few older footballers who came in and, you know, had their last heyday, their final few games in that country and their league. But after they got the World Cup hosting rights, they started going on, they started amplifying how much more, they started to amplify their own football image in a way, you know, with the league got more, you know, in a way it became more professional. They started attracting more players and all the coaches, and Xavi was a big part of that. So it's a bit complicated in that sense. You know, Qatar doesn't, it's hard to say, actually, sorry about that. Can you just repeat the question again? Sorry, can this be edited out?
Sure, yeah. So I'm just saying that obviously you mentioned earlier they won the Asian Cup in 2019.
Right.
And the Qatar All-Stars League has got people like Xavi and Hernandez there. And so is it a reasonable argument to say that FIFA awarded the World Cup to Qatar to help the development there? And it might be the case that perhaps the winning the Asia Cup and people like Xavi Hernandez going there is just proof that that's the FIFA awarding the World Cup has helped the development of football there.
Right. So no, as I was saying, yeah, Qatar, before they got the World Cup hosting rights, they didn't really have much of history. I don't think it's necessarily a case of FIFA trying to improve football in the region or anything like that. Football can be encouraged in different ways, even without countries getting World Cup hosting rights. We've seen massive countries before, countries like India, they have massive interest in football and they didn't need a World Cup to get that. That just comes organically in a way. As I said before, this is just a weird decision to give Qatar the World Cup, and every piece of development you've seen in Qatar in football has come after they got the hosting rights. They had the Aspire Academy before, which is probably the most professional and sound academy in the Middle East and one of the most popular in Asia. But apart from that, there was no real football history to associate it with Qatar. So as I've been saying throughout the episode, it's a bit dodgy to give them the hosting rights.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with anything you said, but I'm just playing devil's advocate and sort of asking the question. But, I agree with all that you said there. Stu?
Yeah, like I say, I agree with Karen there. And I suppose, a little bit with you, Gary. I get that FIFA, and rightly so. I mean, it's a World Cup. It's a global game. It's the most popular game in the world. And, there's no reason why it should just be sort of Europe and South America alternating the World Cup tournaments as was. And we've had ones in Japan and South Korea, we've had them in South Africa. So, there's no reason as to why, World Cup tournaments can't go to continents that maybe we don't necessarily associate. But I agree with what Karen's saying in that there just doesn't seem to be anything with regards to Qatar. There's no history to the game. And I'm sure we'll sort of come to this. It's almost like, and I imagine this is what it is, it's like they've bought it, which again, when it comes to, Karen mentioned sports washing, it's almost like they've just bought it. They have enough money, enough infrastructure to be able to buy themselves anything they want. And again, throughout this series, I seem to always come back to the same point about how FIFA can allow something, whatever it is that we're talking about, Gary. Usually I question how FIFA have allowed it to happen. And again, it feels like FIFA has been bought. Now, obviously, that's going to be no surprise to anyone, but it almost feels to me as if it was almost like there is a bidding process, but it was almost a converse bidding process where who could provide the most money, who could provide arguably the best infrastructure. It was almost the history of the game was almost completely disregarded for this World Cup and the hosting of this World Cup. Footballing sense, it makes no sense to me, none at all.
I mean, I agree. I think Karen used a wonderful phrase earlier. He said, no football fan understands why the World Cup's gone to Qatar. And I've not met one who would say that Karen's wrong, because I don't think he is. And I suppose one of the major issues people have with the World Cup going to Qatar is the climate. And they talk about moving the World Cup to the winter to play there. I mean, what do you think about that, Karen? That's the first time the World Cup would ever have been played in the winter rather than the summer months, just to facilitate it going to Qatar.
It's a bit... I mean, when you think of World Cup, think of the summer, don't you? So it's just a terrible thing altogether. When the decision was confirmed that they were going to in the winter, I just didn't feel like watching it. It's the sort of World Cup you just want to forget. And it's a shame because there's going to be so many great players playing their last World Cup in that World Cup, but it just won't feel very authentic, will it? So, and that's with World Cup, because it's such a good tournament, it's such a popular tournament, and everybody loves it. When you lose a bit of identity, and the identity being the summer, it being held in the summer, it just starts to feel like you don't want to be a part of it. So
yeah, I understand exactly what you said about the summer, and the obviously the other thing is it drops the World Cup like a big stone right into the middle of the European League program and causes waves and ripples that can sort of cause massive disruption. To the domestic league structure. I mean, and that this is one of the extra prices that FIFA have decided that individual countries are going to have to pay for the World Cup to go to Qatar. You know, for what? What is the extra gain they're getting there? It just seems a very strange decision, doesn't it?
Yep, and more because, and it's perfectly right to have it in the winter because Qatari heat is terrible and players will actually collapse by playing a 90-minute match. But why have it in the country in the first place?
Yeah. So can you give for the sort of I appreciate that you sort of grew up in the UAE, so the love the politics of the region, perhaps there's something that you are more familiar with than a lot of other people who might be listening. So can you give us a little bit of political background to Qatar and any political backwash that might be around the awarding of the World Cup to them?
Yep, sure. At the time, there was no real animosity with Qatar having the World Cup. As I said before, that when Qatar got the hosting rights, when it was officially announced in December 2010, it was a bit of a celebration in a way that the World Cup was coming to the Middle East and it was something that they were happy with. And obviously, that was the same year that Africa hosted the World Cup for the first time in South Africa. So it was nice to see the game being globalized. But as the years went on, the relationship between Qatar and the rest of the Middle East, or most of the Middle East, started to sour, especially in 2017 when the blockade happened, when the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and a bunch of other Middle Eastern countries and North African countries decided that they didn't want anything to do with Qatar because they believed that Qatar was sponsoring a few or, you know, helping a few terrorist groups. So they started to distance themselves from Qatar and decided that they were going to close down borders and airways and all that. So that was when the relationship really soured. And many people at the time believed that the World Cup played a large role in that. People, there was this one government official from the UAE who said that they will fix up their relationship with Qatar, provided Qatar split the World Cup hosting rights with the rest of the Middle East. But there's always been the main reason for the blockade has been the terrorist thing, but in the backdrop there's always been a hint of the World Cup being there. So right now they're saying that should Middle Eastern nations qualify for the World Cup, there will be no issues, like there was no issues when Qatar came to UAE for the Asian Cup. But you just get the feeling that the animosity will last and the World Cup has a large role to play in that.
You do wonder why those sort of things, as you just mentioned there, that, you know, and it might be okay, but it might be okay isn't necessarily something that is going to be okay. So it's just one more complication to add into the puzzle. Yeah, Stu?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, a question for me, Karen. In terms of obviously Qatar putting the bid in, you know, and looking, you know, you mentioned there about looking to share the hosting with other countries in the Middle East. In your opinion, two questions. Is the Middle East, was the Middle East ready to be awarded a World Cup? Or is there a better nation that would probably be more appropriate to host it?
Well, in the Middle East itself, do you mean?
Yeah, in the Middle East area, yeah.
No, Qatar is almost perfect. If it was going to the Middle East, it was either going to be Qatar or the UAE. And because they're the most prominent nations there. Saudi Arabia at the time when the rights were given was still a little backward with the law. It's lightened up a little bit, but at the time Saudi Arabia was still a little backward. The UAE and Qatar were the most prominent Middle Eastern nations, so it was going to be either one of them if the World Cup was going to go to the Middle East. And Qatar, they got it in the end.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess this is all the other tournaments we've spoke about have had some action to discuss and about games and players and events within the tournament. Obviously, this is a different situation, so we haven't got through. We're going to concentrate massively on the awarding and, you know, the whys and the wherefore. I think perhaps one of the major news stories that's been coming out of Qatar with regard to the World Cup has been the construction of stadiums and the way construction workers have been treated in the country there. And I mean, this is sort of, you know, something that always seems very strange to and difficult to sort of appreciate. I mean, I guess you know, people not from the region may have sort of more difficulty in appreciating it. But you know, it seems that almost like people have been sacrificed on the altar of getting these stadiums produced.
Yep,
is that unfair?
No, you're absolutely right. I think that the main reason for the animosity towards the Qatari World Cup is the human rights abuses, and you know, there have been statistics to show the toughness of it, that there are estimated to be around 4,000 people dying before a ball is even kicked in Qatar, and that's very shameful. That's more than I think every World Cup combined in history. So you can see where the problem arises, and I feel away from the corruption and away from the money and everything, I feel Qatar should be stripped of the World Cup rights for that reason alone, because in the end, it's just football, right? It's not some massive thing that people sacrifice themselves for. It's just football in the end. And for that reason alone, Qatar should not be hosting the World Cup.
Sure, yeah. Oh, it's difficult to argue. Stu?
Yeah, I mean, again, we look back through this series, you know, obviously we've done the series for a reason, because of the nature of the title, it's incredibly political, but there always seems to be reasons as to why nations either shouldn't have either been awarded it in the first place, or things have come to light whereby perhaps maybe it should have been, you know, the hosting should have been removed from them and given elsewhere. Now, it seems from the minute that Qatar were awarded it, people have people have come up with reasons, given reasons, found reasons, you know, to have Qatar stripped of the World Cup. And you know, as you mentioned there, Karen, you know, the human rights issues alone would be enough. And I know that the last one we did, Gary, wasn't it, with Russia? And there was a whole list of things whereby almost the list was so big that it was almost, look, do you know what, if even one of these things could have had the World Cup cancelled, but because they all go ahead, we'll just let it go ahead. But the point I'm coming to, in terms of Qatar and obviously the human rights issues, where do you see the fault lying, Karen, in terms of the fact that Qatar do still have the World Cup?
It just comes down to money in the end, isn't it? Because I think the World Cup will go ahead. I don't see any way that it's not going to go ahead in Qatar in November and December in 2022. And that comes down to the money invested itself. Qatar got the World Cup in 2010, a decade ago. And in that time, they've spent billions and billions on infrastructure and stadiums and hotels and roads and airports and et cetera, et cetera. If FIFA decides one day, magically, miraculously, to strip Qatar off the rights, they will have a massive legal issue. And for that reason alone, I cannot see FIFA saying, okay, fine, here, I'm going to be a little nice, and because you violated so many human rights issues, I'm going to take the World Cup off it. It's never going to happen, because Qatar are going to bite back and bite back very hard. So there it is, I guess. I mean, it's just money in the end.
Yeah. It's the old story. You people say money talks. It doesn't talk. It shouts. You mentioned about Qatar not having much of a football history, and yet they won the Asia Cup in 2019. So how did a country with, I think I probably know the answer, but I want you to sort of, you know, for our listeners, how did a country with no football history manage to win the Asia Cup?
Well, that's interesting, because there are a few factors behind it. Firstly, they tried to boost their football profile. Obviously, the Qatari Stars League was a massive reason for that. The league became more prominent and it became more professional in a way. The Aspire Academy was a big part as well. They decided to train younger players in a better way, get more foreign coaches. Even the head coach of the national team is a Spanish coach. I can't remember his name. But, you know, they started taking more foreign involvement. One of the more prominent reasons would be the naturalization of foreign athletes, which is that they took athletes who weren't exactly born in Qatar and they gave them Qatari citizenship and they became players for the national team. Lots of players from Sudan, Iran, lots of other North African countries or Central African countries play for Qatar, but they weren't exactly born in the nation. The most prominent example of that would be Al-Mu'ayyiz Ali, who was the top scorer for Qatar in the Asian Cup. He scored 9 goals, which I believe is a record in the competition's history. So he wasn't exactly born in Qatar. He was born in Sudan, and he was the best player in that tournament. And he's one of the main examples. There are a few other examples, like there's a player called Roro, which is a nickname, he has an actual name. He's Portuguese, but he played most of his career in Qatar. So it's that sort of thing. They took a lot of foreign players or players who weren't born in Qatar and gave them Qatari citizenship. Now, it has been a bit of a problem in the past. In one game against China in a friendly in 2015, I believe, they had a team that included 8 foreign-born players. So that was a bit problematic. And in the Asian Cup itself, in the semi-final, in the UAE, no less, against the UAE, they won 4-0 in the semi-final. And I think Al Mawaz Ali scored a few goals. I can't remember if he scored one or two, but he scored a few goals in that game. And he basically, after that game, the UAE said that player should not be playing for Qatar because they broke eligibility laws, and that he should not be allowed to play in the tournament. So there was a bit of saltiness there, and you know, the UAE got a bit troublesome, but FIFA said it's fine, and the AFC said it's fine, and they ended up winning the tournament. So the naturalization is one of the bigger reasons for that, and also the, as I said before, the influence of foreign coaches and, you know, making the league bigger and the players better. And I think, I'm not sure on this, but I think local people took more interest in the domestic league as well. I think the attendance figures before the World Cup and before the Spanish influence with Xavi and all that, there were barely any people, and, you know, people almost, there was a rumor that people were paid to go to games just to, you know, make the attendance look big. But I feel that the interest rose locally over time. So that plays a massive part. I do feel the football operation is quite streamlined and it looks good. I think that they will do well in the World Cup. Firstly, because they've improved, and secondly, because they have the adrenaline of being the hosts. I think they can get to at least the round of 16, but their football operation on the pitch itself seems quite reasonable. I've read a few pieces about it and how it's much more streamlined and much more authentic, despite off-pitch issues.
It's interesting you mentioned about the nationalisation, which was one of the points where I was sort of I was hoping you'd touch on. Because, you know, I suppose people, we could go back sort of, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago when you used to have people representing the Republic of Ireland or even Northern Ireland because their grandmother or grandfather was from the Republic or whatever, or was argued to be. And there's a famous case, I think it was Tony Cascarino, who was played many times for the Republic and actually, by some people's arguments, never qualified. So you mentioned this guy from Sudan. I mean, How have FIFA been, elastic, shall we say, with the application of the normal rules of qualification?
I'm sorry, interesting.
So obviously in the past, in not too distant past, people have been representing Ireland or Northern Ireland because their grandfather or grandmother came from there. And you mentioned the guy from Sudan who played for Qatar. So the question I'm asking is, was there any real, genuine affiliation for him to Qatar, or were FIFA just being very elastic with the application of the rules?
Right, yeah, so Al Mawaz Ali, he played his whole career in Qatar. And as I said before, when the case came that the UAE complained about Al Mawaz Ali being Sudanese, one of the main reasons that FIFA said there was no issue and the AFC said there was no issue was that Al Mawaz Ali publicly revealed that his mother was born in Qatar and she was raised in Qatar and all that. So I think that was the turning point in that, you know.
Okay. That's fair enough, yeah. Stu?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mentioned the Republic of Ireland scenario, Gary, because that's what instantly sprung to my mind as well. But I suppose the question is then, in terms of, you know, you talk about fan base in the domestic league in Qatar, you know, it's quite well supported and, you know, football there seems very streamlined, very efficient, as I imagined it would be. But in terms of, you know, when you field these eight non-Qatari nationals, what's the relationship like between the Qatari public and the Qatari national team?
That's an interesting question because with Qatar and with almost every country in the Middle East, especially the UAE and Qatar, a large majority of their population is going to be expatriates. So you could say that the football teams are almost a reflection of their societies. So one of the things I find most surprising, especially growing up in the UAE, is that more expatriates aren't allowed into the national team. I feel that both national teams would benefit greatly, and Qatar are now taking advantage of it. Obviously, there are rules that prevent foreign nationals from playing for a particular national team, but Qatar are now finding a way to integrate foreign players, and as we've seen, it's helping them greatly. So, as I said before, it is a reflection of their society that foreign-born players are now playing for their national team, and they are being benefited by it. You know,
Are the fans? Is this something whereby if, I mean, I don't know if football is a relatively new sport there, it may well not be, but is this just something that Qatari fans have grown up with and accept and has never been an issue? Or is it something they've had to get used to? Or is it something where, because the World Cup is coming, it's something for them to sort of get behind?
It's hard to say, really, because I think that now it's something that they've just accepted, especially after winning a tournament. If you're winning tournaments, I don't think anybody will complain. So I don't think there's a clear answer to that question. I don't feel that anyone will say that, oh my God, this guy should not be playing for our country because he's not a local. But now that they're having success with it and they have the World Cup coming up, I feel that they are more accepting of it.
Yeah. I mean, we've sort of covered, I don't know, seven or eight, actually, I think this is the 10th, actually, thinking about it, tournaments, World Cup tournaments. I think in almost everyone, if not everyone, there's been more than a wisp of talk of corruption about why the tournament was given to a certain country. And, you know, we've sort of gone through, I don't know, the last sort of half an hour or so discussing why Qatar may not have been suitable. And yet they've got the tournament. So the question is this, I guess, is it inevitable that there's talk of corruption for Qatar getting the tournament?
Definitely a lot of corruption going on behind the scenes. The facts alone prove that Qatar, as you said throughout the episode, that Qatar isn't a massive football nation. There is no reason to give them the World Cup. So there's definitely some sort of corruption going on behind the scenes. And there are key people involved behind it. The biggest instance of this was the 2015 arrests in Switzerland with FIFA, and when people like Jack, over the course of time, people like Jack Warner and Sepp Blatter and Michel Platini and lots of others were almost, you know, but the allegations came out that they were involved in some sort of corruption or corrupt activities. The biggest character in this whole scenario would probably be Mohammed bin Hammam. Now, bin Hammam officially, according to Qatar, wasn't involved in the bidding process. They say that he wasn't involved in an official capacity, but a few other people say that he was the biggest lobbyist for votes. Now, bin Hammam, to understand his importance in all this, it's worth looking back into his history. He's been one of the most crucial figures in Qatari football. He was the president of the Qatari Football Association in the 90s. Then he became the president of the AFC in the 2000s, and he lasted in that role for nearly a decade. And then he ran for FIFA presidency in 2011 alongside Sepp Blatter, or against Sepp Blatter, who at one point was a great friend of his. So the FIFA presidency didn't happen because he withdrew his application after being accused of corruption. But when it comes to the 2010 World Cup bid, it is believed that he was the key figure behind all the corruption. There are allegations that he gave a lot of money to African football association, African delegates, or people from African nations. You know, there was this allegation that he paid around $5,000 to several members of countries from African nations for their bids, and then people like the president of the Ivory Coast FA or the Cameroonian FA. He paid them collectively about $800,000 for development in their region in exchange for a World Cup vote. So he was the main lobbyist behind it all. And he got rightly called out for it. I think he was banned for life from FIFA in 2012. So there are a lot of figures and a lot of people involved in the corruption scandal. Obviously, Sepp Blatter was ousted from FIFA largely for this reason. Michel Platini as well was taken out of UEFA and, you know, just put away and banned for life from football. So there is a lot of evidence and a lot of allegations to suggest that the Qatari bid, as we all suspect, was not authentic or clean.
Yeah, Stu?
I think you say he was banned from FIFA, Karen. I mean, I don't know, this might be a side issue here, but in terms of being banned from FIFA, was that a Sepp Blatter decision? Or was that done by sort of executive committee?
Well, it does look like it's something Sepp Blatter would be involved in. At the time, as I said, he was running for presidency of FIFA, and it's fair to say that he had a bit of support, especially from the African, the CAF, the African Football Association, the body that overlooks African football. And obviously, because he was the president of AFC for a very long time before it, I feel that Asia would have backed him as well. So I think that he would have gotten a lot of support from these two continents, and, you know, maybe a bit of support from Europe and North America and South America. So I think that in the end, he would have had a good shot of becoming FIFA president. So Sepp Blatter may have been involved in some dupey things to get him out of the picture completely.
Yeah, I mean,
you mentioned go.
I was going to say, I mean, when you look at what FIFA's done, what's come to light, you know, Sepp Blatter, the brass neck, if you like, or the nerve to dismiss someone from FIFA for corruption, and yet be the person that you are. But like, as you say, somebody who was looking to challenge, and that's very, I mean, you know, we've gone through this and looked at Havelange and then Blatter, you know, and Blatter is a protege of Havelange, and Havelange was very much dismissive of any opponent and would remove them from office, would remove them from their position, you know, if any of them were deemed a threat, which is why I was quite interested when you mentioned there that he was removed from FIFA for corruption, and it just seemed unbelievable that FIFA could do that without looking at itself. But then it does seem very much a more Sepp Blatter-led decision. And obviously on what you said there with regards to the challenge of the presidency, it makes perfect sense now.
Yep, absolutely. It does look like something FIFA would do and Sepp Blatter would do.
Just we've spoken about Mohammed bin Hamman. I want to just sort of pose different types of organisations, individuals who have sort of been involved in this. So, the first one is media organisations, particularly Al Jazeera and Beat Sport. But then also Qatar have managed to recruit several well-known football personalities as ambassadors, and Xavi Hernandez we've mentioned already, Zinedine Zidane, and Pep Guardiola. So, I mean, just looking at the sort of media organisations first, so perhaps give us your thoughts on those, and then perhaps individuals afterwards.
Yeah, sure. So Al Jazeera is one of the biggest organisations when it comes to the media in the Middle East, and they have a fair say of what of power in the Middle East itself with regards to what news goes out and all that. Now, it's believed that Al Jazeera, who is the parent company of beIN Sports, they're both pretty well linked. It's believed that they offered FIFA a bribe of around $100 million if Qatar won the World Cup hosting bid, and which they did in the end. Now, it's unclear if the money went through, obviously, but that is their influence. People believe that Al Jazeera had a massive role to play in Qatar getting the World Cup. And also Al Jazeera had a massive role to play in the Qatari blockade from the rest of the Middle East as well, you know. So lots of the other Middle Eastern countries believe that Al Jazeera was almost supportive of Qatar's activities politically. And they were also supportive of Qatar's activities when it came to football. So the allegations obviously haven't been confirmed, but it is believed that Al Jazeera had a massive role to play in Qatar getting the World Cup hosting rights. So that's where it is. But when it comes to individuals, it's more of a sports washing thing, you could say, once again, that they're trying to clean up their image by getting in some really popular athletes to back them. at the time, Xavi, Guardiola, Zidane were, and they still are, very big people that almost everyone recognizes them in football. So it's no surprise that they're trying to get the big prominent stars to go and back their bid. Xavi is the biggest example. I feel that him being the ambassador had something to do with him also coaching in the country. And personally, I even feel that at some point in the future, Xavi will coach the national team, maybe after the World Cup. I wouldn't be surprised if Xavi gets the national team job before getting a Barcelona job, which almost seems inevitable. So he's a massive figure in Qatari football. But yeah, that's how it is. They're trying to get popular ambassadors for their tournament to firstly clean up their image and secondly promote the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, living over in Spain, there's people in Catalonia that if Xavi doesn't get the Barcelona job this summer, they'll be throwing themselves into the sea. Interesting. I mean, I can understand why Xavi Hernandez would be involved because obviously he works there. But when you look at people like Guardiola and Zinedine Zidane, these guys aren't short of a few, Bob. You know, I mean, it's just, I don't know why they seem to have, you know, hitched their wagon to the Qatar. To the Qatar horse. It just seems I mean, you know, I don't know how much, you know, they're being paid to support the they are being paid at all, he says, trying to make sure there's no legal problems.
So you get shut down with the last one, Gary.
Yeah, I know. But I just wonder why, you know, they, I mean, I'm sure they are being paid expenses, shall we say, but why are they getting, why do people like Zidane and Guardiola, as I say, highly paid people, why do they sort of get themselves into this, unless they believe truly that it's a wonderfully correct decision? And I mean, you know, like probably everybody else listening, and you know, yourself and Stu as well, Karen, would find that difficult to believe.
He has Middle Eastern heritage, he's born in Algeria, and you know, maybe he just wants to support his region or something like that, you could say. Even Guardiola has a bit of history with Qatar. I think he played there, didn't he?
Or did he play? Briefly.
So maybe at best, you know, for our hopes, it's that they're trying to sponsor or promote a nation that they played in. But it's not uncommon to see popular footballers or even popular movie stars or something like that promoting Middle Eastern nations. Even with the Expo in the UAE, Lionel Messi is a massive sponsor of the Expo in Dubai. Massive supporter, sorry, and he's on billboards everywhere in the country. So it's not uncommon to see popular footballers go and, you know, give the nation a boost and be there and show up for the events.
I understand. I'm not saying it's unusual. I'm just wondering why, you know, because it's an unpopular cause.
Yeah,
I would think throughout football, and I just wonder why they feel the need to earn a few extra bob, you know, supporting them. I mean, I don't know. And, you know, I understand what you say about Zidane, that's fair comment. But wouldn't he be better supporting a North African bid for the World Cup? I don't know. It's just an interesting, I don't know why these guys tie themselves to, I say, this vastly unpopular in the football world, a vastly unpopular World Cup hosting. But they, yes, sir?
Sorry, while you were saying that.
Sorry, Mike, go on. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that they actively do it. You know, promote the World Cup. I haven't seen any ads or, you know, billboards going out with their faces on it recently. I did see it in the past, maybe like 5-7 years ago, but recently it's been a bit toned down, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, I think this was more to do with the bid, wasn't it, though? And they were sort of given, you know, ambassador status for the bid, and they were there to support it. But I mean, obviously, once it's been awarded, their job is done, the box has been ticked, as it were. But it's just an interesting thing to consider.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Stu?
Yeah, I mean, I know everything is of its time, you know, and the time that things are placed in, you know, everything's different. But, you know, sort of listening to your talk there, Gary, and it made me think, you know, I mean, like I say, we've looked at a lot of this now. You know, even if you go back as far as 1978 and you look at the very political World Cup there, and, you know, you had a military dictatorship, it would be, you'd be aghast at players or, you know, high profile names in football supporting the Argentinian hosting of the World Cup. It, it seems like the world has become not a more forgiving place, but it just seems to be more blind is probably a better phrase. It's that there seems to be, and again, I suppose it comes back to money. And we talked about this last time with the one in Russia, and this how can you turn a blind eye to something? How can you ignore it? How can you ignore all of these things? You know, like I say, you look back to 78, how could you, you know, could you realistically see somebody going out to support, you know, the military dictatorship by supporting the hosting of the World Cup by Argentina? You know, it seems incredulous that would ever happen. Yet here we have a country with human rights issues. You know, we have a country with these problems, and yet high profile names are there. And it just seems that we, and I suppose I have to include myself in this, it's almost like we're just immune to it now. It's like we just, yeah, but that's just how it is. That's just the way the world is. That's what happens, you know, and enough gets thrown at the issue that it can just be glossed over, and it trying to put it into context doesn't work. Sitting it as we are right here, right now, talking about Qatar, yeah, I get it. When you try and put this situation back in a previous World Cup, it seems like incredulous that it would ever happen. I think that's where I have an issue, I think.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Actually, you know, for years people have been saying, myself included, we've been saying that we're not going to watch the World Cup or go to the games or whatever. But I'm pretty sure by the time comes, it will all just feel regular. We know it's all happening in the back of our heads that, you know, Qatar has a terrible record with human rights and not giving, or whatever issues that they do have. But when it comes to the World Cup itself, I feel the occasion gets the better of us in a way. I hope that there is more awareness with regards to future hosts, that FIFA takes more precaution and awareness with regards to who they're giving rights to. But this whole thing with Qatar, it's a complete farce. I don't think anybody's going to take the World Cup with pride or anything like that.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, we had, was it Matthew Stew who was on the Russia World Cup?
Yeah, last episode. Yeah,
last one. Yeah, and he said, he said basically we're all hypocrites because we sit there and criticise, Russia and the human rights violations there and anti-LGBT, and drugs and cheating, all this sort of thing in sports. And we all watched the World Cup. And you know what, Karen? You know what? When the World Cup comes around in Qatar, you know what we're all going to do? We're all going to watch it, aren't we? Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, personally, I love the World Cup. I love international football. So when the World Cup comes around, I'll probably be the first one to turn the TV on. But now it's easy to criticize it. But as I said before, the occasion gets the better of us in the end.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's the gamble that, states make. And, you know, I'm not just saying Qatar, but Stu mentioned Argentina 78. We can go back to, Italy in 1938. Was it 38, Stu, am I right?
Yeah.
Italy 38. And so many others in between. And, you know, we just end up, because we're football fans, we love football, and we'll watch it. And, you know, it's never going to happen. But if every football fan decided, you know, that Qatar was a step too far and not watch it, then the sponsors wouldn't spend the money. I mean, you know, I don't know, they spend Coca-Cola or whoever it is, MasterCard, whoever it is, wouldn't spend the money, and sponsors, FIFA wouldn't get the money, and therefore, you know, the tournament wouldn't perhaps work. But that's never going to happen. And this is the calculation, I guess, that states make. And they're always right because football fans, you know, we hooked, it's like a drug for us. And, you know, as you say, Karen, I mean, you say you'll be first. I think I'll be second because I'll be first. we'll all be watching, mate. We'll all be watching, and you're absolutely right. And it's a little bit sad that, you know, we're almost caught in this net we can't escape because of our love of football, and we're just being exploited by people in positions of power who are using the love of football to sportwash, as you say.
Yep, it's in action, isn't it? What the ultimate goal is. People don't, nobody wants to see Manchester City or something like that become a big club inorganically. And that, but when they are here, they get people like Pep Guardiola playing their beautiful football and all that. It just becomes normal. And that's the case with Qatar. They have the biggest tournament in sport.
And absolutely. Still.
Yep. They're going to make us watch it in the end.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I mean, I think unfortunately it will never happen whereby fans en masse will refuse to watch the World Cup, and part of that makes me sad, and it makes me sad because, like, as you two guys have said, I'm one of them. You think to yourself, this was a news story, and I don't know. I don't want to mention it. If it was a supermarket chain, for example, you'd think, I ain't shopping there, I'm going to shop somewhere else, and you would happily do it. But it's like you say, Gary, you know, football is such a drug that we're just as guilty, really, of all these issues, because we can't not do it. You know, we can't not watch it. It's so, you know, the game is so addictive and so important that, you know, really, even, you know, I have to include myself, is that, you know, I'm almost willing to forgive it anything to be able to watch it. And that's probably the really, really sad part of all of this, is that all of us are probably just as culpable as anybody else in this story.
And you're right, yeah. And because every 4 years, it's almost unmissable, isn't it? It's not like it happens every year. Like, we had the Club World Cup in Qatar last year, and, you know, a lot of people just didn't pay attention because it was a Club World Cup and it's not that big a tournament. But when the World Cup comes around every 4 years, you want to watch it. Nobody wants to miss the World Cup, even if your country doesn't play in it.
Yeah, you're right. I guess, you know, there's and I think I know the answer, Karen, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there any possibility that countries, individual country FAs, might decide to say, no, this is not going to happen. We're not going to, I'm not talking about Qatar particularly. I mean, this might just be an example at the time, but, you know, and it might have been Russia in the past, it might have been Argentina in 78, I know there was a claim in the Netherlands for the Dutch not to go to Argentina. But do you think it's possible at any time in the not too distant future, perhaps even European countries under the UEFA umbrella might say, you know, this is wrong, this is a step too far. Might that ever happen? I think I know the answer.
We can hope. We can hope so, but definitely not. I can't say that. Never.
No, I agree. I'm sure you're right. Yeah, Stu?
Yeah, like I say, it's gonna take an incredibly brave football association that will remove remove themselves from a World Cup tournament. However, I suppose if one was brave enough, would that then start to, you know, would it be a chain reaction? Would other nations, you know, follow suit? Is it a case of just one needs to be brave enough? But unfortunately, at the moment, you know, nobody is brave enough. And, you know, as Karen said, it's every 4 years. I mean, there's been 20 World Cups. I mean, you know, that's it. You know, that's all it's been. And nobody wants to miss, you know, nobody wants to miss one. And certainly no one wants to miss hosting one. Or if you qualify and it's the first one you've ever qualified for, nobody wants to miss one. So, unfortunately, it's just going to take somebody. It's going to take somebody or some organisation to make the real change. And at the moment, I can't see where that change will come from. And I suppose I'll probably have to hold my hands up and not be able to lay blame or criticise for that, because I'm just the same.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting that, you know, we look back in the World Cup terms we've covered, other than the first one or two where some countries didn't want to participate because of timing, travel difficulties in the 30s. But if you look at another worldwide sporting organisation, the Olympics, boycotts are not that unusual. Karen, is there any possibility you think this might change?
I doubt that. Beyond just sporting stuff, I think it's a big financial incentive for countries to take part as well. And, you know, more than take part, I feel it's a big financial incentive to not give up or not stand up to the norm. So all we can hope for in the end is, I'm guessing FIFA or whoever the governing body is needs to take action and say, nope, you cannot be a part of this hosting process because your country is not in the right state like Qatar was. We've seen how FIFA, in the backlash of them giving Russia and Qatar the World Cup, decided to streamline their hosting process or host selection process. So we can only hope that that gets better. And, you know, we've seen like with 2026 where USA and Canada and Mexico got the rights, and that was probably fair. There doesn't seem to be a massive issue with that. And that's how it should be. And I might take this a little off topic, but even with the Women's World Cup for 2023, Colombia and Australia and New Zealand, who were the joint bid, they won. And it was the right thing to do. Colombia had a bad record of women's football. They had abuse allegations and poor conditions for players. And it was the right thing to for them to not win, but them merely getting that far to the final stage of the process was wrong. And that's where FIFA are wrong. That's what FIFA need to fix with regards to future World Cup host selections.
Fair call, Mike. Fair call. Yes, Stu?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the next Men's World Cup is split across the USA, Canada, and Mexico now. And I suppose that brings a new, although it will have changed by 2026, but I suppose that brings up a new potential problem that, you know, if you have a country, if it's co-hosting, you have a country that is very open, very liberal, such as Canada, but then you're sharing it with the US, which, you know, the US is also very liberal, or was, you know, and you end up with the US that we have at the moment. How is that going to play out? How will that work with regards to people's thoughts and feelings about the awarding of World Cups, where this co-hosting or this joint awarding of tournaments, you know, and if you have countries together who have, you know, a completely clean bill of human rights, you know, or and then you're not paired, but you decide to co-host with a country that has real issues and real problems at the moment, that's also going to be another future problem that's going to play out. I mean, at the moment, you know, we've just had the one co-hosted tournament, but it looks like it could be, you know, the way to go for major international events. And I suppose it's something else that FIFA are going to need to think about when looking at awarding tournaments.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you think the US and Canada and Mexico is bad. Wait till you hear about North and South Korea deciding to host a World Cup together, something like that. That's together. But, you know, they always talk about having peace in their region and all that, and they want to host a sporting tournament. I feel that they will get one at one point eventually, and it's going to be really bizarre. But you make a good point there about co-host. And we can only hope that the USA gets better in the next 6 years. Hopefully there's a different president to take charge. And once again, it's an issue for FIFA, isn't it, that they have to ensure that whoever is hosting the World Cup at whatever time is firstly capable and secondly has a clean bill, or at least a reasonable or respectable bill to, you know, host the tournament and not have major issues like Qatar has.
Yeah. I mean, across all these podcasts we've done, I always hate the clock. I want to sort of put my hand on the fingers of the clock and stop it rolling around, but we're sort of coming towards the end. But I just want to raise one more issue with you regarding Qatar and sort of lean on your expertise of the political situation of the region. How would it be in Qatar? What would be the reaction if Israel qualified?
I think it would be, people would be encouraged to be neutral towards it. A major problem with that was that when Qatar got the hosting rights, it took them about 9 years to say that Israeli athletes will be fine playing the country. It took 9 years for one official from that World Cup hosting bid or group to come out and say publicly that Israeli athletes will be fine. And that was a bit controversial because it shouldn't take 9 years to say one thing, isn't it? So
sure.
You know, they were consistently pressed about it. The media kept on asking how Israeli athletes will be treated. And I think it will be fine. We've seen Qatar go to the UAE before, like last year, and they seem to be fine, except for when they beat the UAE and they got pelted with a couple of
yeah.
unless Israel beat Qatar at home, I think they'll be fine.
Stu?
Yeah, I think, it's funny, isn't it? We've had, you know, and Karen's mentioned previously, sort of North Korea, and I think where football probably, and I can't, you know, we can give it some credit. You know, I mean, I remember the USA-Iran game. I can't remember which World Cup it was. I don't know if it was 98.
France, I think.
Yeah, France 98, yeah. You know, there's all this, you know, there's all, you know, it's sort of war on a pitch, and it's, you know, and to be fair to football, it never plays out like that. When it actually comes to it, it's just regular guys, you know, the Men's World Cup, regular girls in the Women's World Cup, just playing football. And I think once you get right down to what it's actually all about, which is the game itself, I think football is very, very good then at seeing things for what they are. And I think there will always be, you know, I think nations or teams and players and, you know, the actual personnel involved on the pitch will always be okay in a World Cup, because to football's credit, once the whistle is blown and the ball's out, it does have a sense of sort of realism. It does have a sense of self whereby, look, these are just guys who are here to play football, and, you know, and the game almost embraces that. I think it's the politics, it's the administration, it's everything off the pitch where all the potential problems and actual problems really are. But ultimately on the grass, I think it's always okay.
Yep, it was. And I mentioned earlier the Qatar was at the UAE game from last year in Abu Dhabi, and that got a bit edgy. And the whole Qatari run in that tournament was, it did have a bit of, you know, the spiciness to it in the background. When I remember the day after they won the final against Japan, the sports papers were always on about the Asian Cup being the country, and the front page was always adorned by whatever was happening the previous day. But when Qatar won the tournament and when they beat the UAE, they only got a small section in the complete end of the paper so that nobody would read them. So on the pitch, things are professional as they're supposed to be played, or they care about the 90 minutes and the football and the two goals and whatever happens on the pitch. But off the pitch is where the problems are created, and provided nothing controversial happens during the tournament itself, I don't think that there is any animosity between the players itself, so it should be fine.
I said to answer the question away with this, but I just want to ask you two questions. One's very easy answer, and the other one's a little more complicated. So first question is, do you think the World Cup will go ahead in Qatar? And the second one is, would it be successful? And success, what would a successful World Cup in Qatar look like?
I think the World Cup will go ahead. There is no way that it won't go ahead. As I mentioned previously, it's a massive money issue. And if FIFA say that we're going to take the World Cup somewhere else, it will be a massive legal issue for them. So I can't see the World Cup being stripped off, unless it's another external issue that's completely unrelated to football or money, like a health issue or something like that. But the way things are going, it seems unlikely that the World Cup won't be going ahead in Qatar. So that's pretty much off the table. The second one, with the World Cup being a success or not, I feel that the World Cups we expect the least of become the most successful ones. I think Russia was probably the second best World Cup that I've ever witnessed. So I think it will be better than people expect, but there will always be this thing in people's minds that this should not be going ahead. So the only thing that can make this look good for Qatar is that the football is good, like it was in Russia, like it was for the last two or three World Cups, that the quality is good, there are goals, there's entertainment, there's something to take away from the tournaments, that, you know, the off-pitch issue has become the secondary topic, and the on-pitch issue has become the primary thing that people remember 20, 30 years from now. So I think a successful World Cup for Qatar would be to create a legacy on the pitch and make people forget what happens off of it, which is a shame, but that's how sport works, isn't it?
That's a brilliant answer, Karen. Yeah, Stu?
Yeah, it's like I say, it's when all of this is said and done, and all the politics, you know, like I say, we've done 40 odd episodes of this guy. If the football is entertaining, pretty much everything else is either forgotten or forgiven, or is just, you know, but a footnote. I think I wonder whether FIFA will or have looked at themselves having made this decision and thought this, you know, this wasn't great. We, you know, either we need to be more careful, we need to really think about who, you know, who we vote for when we award tournaments, or maybe it's the actual system of awarding, because, you know, as Karen's mentioned there, you know, everybody's votes, you know, votes can be bought, you know, you can canvas for votes, so maybe they have to look at the voting system. But I just wonder whether FIFA have either learned a lesson or will learn from this, regardless of how good the football is. And, you know, Cam's right, the football was great in Russia, and, you know, if it's great in Qatar, that's wonderful for the fans. But to stop themselves going through this again, you just wonder whether they've taken note and really, really learned from this whole 2018, 2022 scenario.
Yep, absolutely. And you do hope that in the future, it does become more cleaner. I think that FIFA have learned a lot from this. Obviously, the 2015 issue was the biggest, when they had people being arrested left, right and center, and they had to get a new president and all that. So I think that they will be more cautious and more vigilant about who they select. But it's a massive learning lesson for not just FIFA, I think everyone in football, and the globalization of the game.
Yeah. So, no pressure here, because this is the final question in the final episode or the final series of the political football. So, do you think the Qatar 2022 World Cup will be the most political World Cup of all time?
I think so. Personally, there'd be a bit of bias, because this is the first World Cup that's been so political for me. I've never witnessed Argentina 78 or Italy in the 1930s, but so I feel that this is the most political World Cup. Certainly, I feel that it's the most talked about World Cup there will be for a very long time, and not just because of the stuff that happens on the pitch, but off it as well.
Fantastic, mate. Thank you. And final thoughts, Steve?
It's going to be interesting. I think people waited for the World Cup in Russia, but ultimately it was a European World Cup. And, you know, people, you know what you're going to get with a European tournament, with a South American tournament. I think people have looked at Japan and South Korea, and for different reasons, you know, will it feel the same? You know, games indoors, games at, you know, kickoff times, co-hosts. Then obviously you have, you know, South Africa, you know, what the African nation would bring to host in a World Cup. So you're right. I think this is will be a very anticipated World Cup. And as Matt mentioned last week about the one in Russia, and how, you know, of its age in terms of information technology and social media, you know, again, we're going to be sort of where we're now 4 years down the line from, 2 years down the line from where we currently sit, 4 years from the last World Cup. You know, and you think about access to information, camera phones, you know, instant news. You know, this World Cup is going to be under the microscope like no other World Cup has ever been. And it's crucial that after all of this, that it does get it right once it starts, because it's going to be watched for a whole host of reasons, but it's also going to be, you know, like I say, the subject of instant news, worldwide news, you know, things, the most smallest of incidents will be around the globe within seconds. So, you know, if a major incident happens, then, you know, then heaven knows what'll happen.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Karen, I was going to say a massive thanks for coming on today and talking about Qatar 2022, might I say?
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's always been a good lesson, this series, and it's a pleasure to be on the show and talk about a World Cup that's fairly close to me. So,
yeah, well, thanks for coming on board. And I just want to say a massive thank you to all our guests over the 40-odd episodes we've recorded on the Political Football. They've been outstanding guests, and Karen's been right up there with the peak of them. So many things we've learned about politics and football and how these things are inevitably linked. Also, massive thanks to all the listeners who've stayed along with us, and I hope we've sort of entertained you as we've gone across through the 2 or 3 years we've been doing the Political Football. And biggest thanks to my my co-host, Stu, without who this would not be possible. So massive thanks to you, buddy.
Like I say, there's never any need to thank me for this, Gary. I think, like I say, we've got an extra series because I didn't want to finish the last. We didn't want to finish the last series. It's just been brilliant. I can't tell you how much I've learned.
Yeah, me too, mate.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Okay, so that was the Political Football. That's our fifth series, our final series. And as I say, thank you so much to everybody who's listened. Thank you so much to all our guests who've come on board. And keep listening to the Lob podcast from These Football Times, because we've got so much more good stuff coming. And, you know, who knows, 2 or 3 years down the line, we might be back with the Political Football.
Yes,
but, Gary. From there, thank you. And thanks and bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.